Welcome, and thank you for listening to Grace Heritage Church Audio, building a household of faith on a foundation of grace.
Lift your eyes and put your armor on. Hear the call of Christ our captain. For now the weak can say that they are strong. In the strength that God has given, with shield of faith and belt of truth, we'll stand against the devil's lies. An army bold, whose battle cry is love, reaching out to those in darkness. Call to war, to love the captive soul, but to rage against the captor, and with the sword that makes the wounded whole, we will fight with faith and valor. When faced with trials on every side, we know the outcome is secure. Christ will have the price for which he died, an inheritance of nations. Come see the cross where love and mercy meet, as the Son of God is stricken. Then see his foes lie crushed beneath his feet, for the conqueror has risen. And as the stone is rolled away, and Christ emerges from the grave, this victory march continues till this day. Every eye and heart shall see him. Give grace for every hurdle, that we may run with faith to win the prize of a servant good and faithful. As saints of old still line the way, retelling triumphs of his grace, we hear their call and hunger for the day when with Christ we stand with glory.
Amen.
You have my vision.
Be thou my vision, thou me.
So we're going to do some sermon and Bible study talk back for a few minutes, and I'm doing this because we're live streaming, and so we'll do this for a few minutes, and then we'll pray together, and in 2 weeks, we'll be kind of back to our more normal preaching in morning and evening. So I'm really grateful for Garrett preaching. It's nice to be able to, it's good for you to have a break from me. It's good for me to have some time to plan and prepare when I'm not planning a sermon. So just really quickly, we looked at Psalm 82 this morning in Bible study. And in just a minute, I'm going to ask you to come and do a little snapshot of your sermon, okay, so that people can get that back in their mind. Because you might have more questions about the sermon. Psalm 82 was basically, judges ought to judge rightly. They're going to be held accountable for that by God. God's the ultimate judge. And we, while we can certainly participate in what's going on and ought to, we ought not despair when things don't go well around us, because God the judge will judge. And they are just men and women who are in positions of authority like that and will give an account. So... but any questions about that or application things that we talked about this morning? It's pretty straightforward. So I do want to encourage you. It'd be interesting to keep a diary, wouldn't it, of the amount of time that I grumble about leadership versus the time that I pray for people in leadership. And so I just want to encourage you to pray this week specifically for people like... Mayor Ron Anders, and in Opelika, the mayor is Gary Fuller. And you can look up, I'm sure on our local websites, you can look up names of council members and school board members and things like that. Presidents at Auburn, and pray for your teachers. Pray for, especially if you're homeschooled, your teacher really needs your prayers because you are hard to deal with. And, those kinds of things. So maybe think in terms this week of praying for people who are making decisions that affect you more than grumbling about them and the decisions they make. Garrett, why don't you come do a quick recap on John 7?
We'll see if there are any questions about that.
There you go. Well, good evening. It's good to see everybody. This morning I preached from John 7, from verses 1 through 24. It broke down kind of neatly into three sections. The first one was kind of about how Jesus has plans and purposes of his own. He does things for his own purposes and for his own in his own time. And the way I tried to apply that was that God has information that we're not privy to, and he's under no obligation to tell us everything that he wants to do. And that's part of what it means to walk by faith and live by faith, is to trust God's character and to trust in his promises and to trust in his word, even when we want to know why and we want to know the outcome and the purpose and the reasons. We trust God's character. Jesus, the way I kind of got that was, Jesus basically tells his brothers, no, I'm not going up to the feast with you. And then he turns right around and goes up to the feast in private. And it's not that he was lying or misrepresenting or deceiving. It's he had a particular purpose, and what they were asking him to do was not that. I'm not going to go to the feast with you in the way that you want me to. And I'm not going to go right now. I'm going to go in a way I can do it privately and according to the will of God. The second point was that Jesus' purpose, one of his purposes, is to reveal his identity to his people. And so you have the crowds debating, is this a good man? Is this a wicked man? And Jesus is kind of orchestrating things to reveal his true identity to his people, to show that he is indeed the Son of God and the Messiah prophesied in the Old Testament. And then the last point was that kind of interesting section about Moses and Abraham. And Jesus' judgment is better than ours. And it's in that section that I talked about. Jesus was, the crowd was mad at him, or the Jewish leaders were mad at him, because they alleged that he violated the Sabbath. Jesus kind of turns the question on them and says, well, if you're going by this strict definition, you violate the Sabbath all the time when you circumcise someone on the eighth day, if the eighth day happens to fall on the Sabbath. What Jesus was saying is that it is not a violation of the Sabbath to circumcise someone on the eighth day. In a similar way, it's not a violation of Jesus to, it's not a violation of the Sabbath for Jesus to heal on a Sabbath day. Kind of the way I made that connection was, circumcision came before the law of Moses and was a foundational identity marker of the covenant people of God. It had precedent over the Sabbath command because it was a foundational pillar of their covenant identity. When Jesus heals the lame man at the pool of Bethesda in John 5, it's a covenant identity mark that that physical healing was a symbol of spiritual regeneration. And regeneration is the covenant sign of the new covenant. Not baptism. I don't know if I've mentioned that. But it's regeneration. A new heart. The indwelling of the Holy Spirit. And so that fundamental covenant identity marker of the new covenant takes priority, takes precedent over some of the Mosaic stipulations of the Sabbath law. Jesus did not violate the Sabbath. He did not do away with the Sabbath. He kept the Sabbath in a fuller new covenant way. That's the gist of it. Any questions? I'm happy to answer any questions. Yes. That's a great question. If you didn't hear, she's asking, I kind of was making a point that when we desire to know God's purposes, it's really not different from wanting to give approval to God's plan, as if God has to run it by us first or something like that. She's asking, is it ever okay to want to know, or it's not even bad to want it. It's not even okay to want to know. What do y'all think? I'm interested. Anybody have any? Yeah. Sure. Anybody else have any thoughts about that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So I made a connection at one point in the sermon to the Garden of Gethsemane, and where Jesus says, "Not my will, but yours be done." Well, that's important, obviously, but the things prior to that, three times he asked, "Take this cup away from me," and God didn't do it. I think Jesus genuinely desired the cup to be taken away from him. Again, parsing out, according to his human nature, the divine nature, there was no conflict in that situation. According to his human nature, I think Jesus wanted a different way, in a sense. And God said no. I don't think Jesus sinned in asking for the cup to be taken away. So I think in answer to Miss Kathy's question, I don't think it's a sin to want to know God's plan, to want to know God's purpose, to want to know God's will. I do think where it kind of crosses the line into demanding for the sake of he needs my approval is if it's I'm going to hold God at arm's length until he gives me what I want. And that's what I was kind of trying to target there. Another example from Scripture is Paul prays for the Lord to take his thorn from his side. Prayed three times. God didn't do it. I think Paul genuinely wanted this thing away. God's point is, my power is made perfect in your weakness. This is meant to show your weakness, and my power, my grace in you is sufficient. I think in the same way, we want to know things, and God doesn't always tell us. And it's to elicit humility in us, and it's to elicit faith in us, and to show his power, his sovereignty, trump our necessity of knowing. Paul?
Another great illustration of that would be Mary at the announcement of the angel that she's going to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And she does say, how is this possible?
Mm-hmm.
So she has questions, and I don't know that the angel satisfies her, and certainly doesn't remove all of the anxiety about what's coming for a woman who is going to be considered for the rest of her life to have had a baby out of wedlock,
mm-hmm.
in that culture and situation. So where it seems like the dividing line is that we have a tendency to say, well, I'll obey you or trust you or believe you as long as everything that's going on makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But when we can't see the end from the beginning and we stop trusting God, it's when we start sinning.
Yeah, that's a good example. Another kind of parallel to put with that, Mary, when she hears that, she says, how is this to be? Zechariah, when he hears about the birth of John, he basically is like, his questioning is from a posture of suspicion and distrust. Mary's question is from a posture of trust. I think to come back to our question, we can desire to know God's purpose from a posture of humble trust in God. I want to know, but I'm humbly trusting you going forward. Or we can say, I don't know about this, and if this doesn't go my way, I'm out. There's a posture of distrust and a posture of trust. And that changes your attitude and your questions. Even if the phrasing is similar, the attitude, that the heart that it's flowing from, those questions is different. So, any other thoughts or questions about the sermon, or anything confusing, or...
being like, you know, if it's not just like, woo, success, like I'm out right now. I think that's kind of the heart posture, like trajectory. So that deeper, like deeper magic, like knowing that the Lord's will is being worked out in His sovereignty, because you are sure that God is for your good and He's for it always and whatever is happening. I think that's really the like heart posture difference and how those two points kind of collide and work itself out. I don't know if that makes sense, but it keeps kind of coming to mind. So
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Deep magic?
Yeah.
I'll have to check in Bob Inc. and see if that's in there. Go ahead, Byron.
I wanted to ask this question during the sermon.
I'm glad you waited. I never would have recovered. That's a great question. Give me just a couple minutes to explain what I understand about the Sabbath command. So, the Sabbath, where do we first encounter the Sabbath?
Creation.
Genesis 2. First part of Genesis 2, God rests on the seventh day. And He gives it as a day of rest, and we are to follow the example of God. So, Sabbath is a, the idea of Sabbath, this day of rest, is a creation pattern that is part of God's eternal moral law. This is just how God made things. It's an the Sabbath idea is God's purpose for creation. There's a particular expression of the Sabbath command in the Mosaic law. And that's where you get some of those in those really particular things, like you can't walk more than, you know, 200 yards out your front door, and you can't, and that you've got all these particulars in like Leviticus and end of Exodus and Numbers. And so you've got these particulars of the Mosaic kind of administration of this Sabbath command of God's moral law. And we see that codified in the new, in the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are God's moral law. And all of the rest of the Mosaic law are particular expressions of God's moral law applied to society in His civil law, applied to the sacrificial system in the ceremonial laws, and applied to personal piety in the moral laws. And so the Ten Commandments are true from Genesis to Revelation because they're an expression of God's eternal moral nature. They never change. So when Jesus comes in the Sermon on the Mount and He says, "You've heard it said this, but I say to you this," what He's doing is He is calling people to see the moral law, not so much through the prism of Moses, but through the prism of creation and the new covenant. It's not a contradiction of Moses, but it's an affirmation of God's law. So that's why I usually try to say on Sunday mornings, this is a Christian Sabbath. Not because we're doing what Moses said, but because we're doing what God did in Genesis 2 in a particular new covenant administration of the Sabbath. So I think what I'm saying is consistent with our confession of faith when it talks about the Sabbath. This is a point of contention in theological circles about the how things, what things stay the same from Old to New Testament and what things are different. I hold to a view that's pretty strongly continuous, strong continuity. There's definitely some changes. The new covenant's new for a reason, but it's not because we kick the Sabbath out. So we honor the Sabbath when we worship and rest on the Lord's Day. That's why we don't do it on Saturday. It's a new covenant administration of the Christian Sabbath. That's my take on it. It's the shortest way I could explain it. Any other questions or thoughts or comments from the sermon? Happy to answer that. Sure.
It's not so much a player, maybe it's a comment.
My favorite kind.
You said this morning, not rightly so, that the brothers want Jesus to put His power on display. And Jesus says it's not time to do that. And I think generally, when every time Jesus refers to his time, he's talking about the crucifixion. Mm-hmm. And would it be fair to say that that was the single greatest public display and the display of Christ to which we ought to always be pointing?
Yes. The short answer is yes. I was going to make that point. And then I started looking at the word for time, and it's kairos and not aura. When he talks about my hour has not yet come, so think back to John 2, when he turns the water into wine. Mary says, they run out of wine. He says, woman, my hour has not yet come. And he's, all through John is using this theme of Jesus' hour as a reference to the cross. I was going to make that point, but he says, my time has not yet come. I was like, I wonder if that's the same thing. It's a different word, but I think it's the same idea. And so, yeah, the public demonstration of Christ's glory is not the triumphal entry. It's not the Feast of Booths. It's not even the wedding feast at Cana. It's on the cross. And it's a very counterintuitive kind of glory. It's not what the disciples wanted or expected. It's not what the crowds wanted or expected. But after the resurrection, Jesus on the road to Emmaus, their eyes were open, their hearts were warmed, and it all made sense. And yeah, I think it takes faith to understand the crucifixion as glory and not as shame.
I think a part of where my brain's kind of running on that is that our tendency is to say, oh, here are the glorious things, and we talk about the miracles, and certainly they are a display of God's glory. But the thing to which we can most clearly connect in the Christian life is the journey to the cross. Mm-hmm. and that work of dying and what comes on the other side of that.
Yeah.
It takes faith to believe that. It takes trust, because even as Jesus is saying, I would rather have this go away, I think there's a part in all of us that when God's shaping pressures and circumstances come to life, we all say, I would rather that go away. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're called to trust the Lord, that this is indeed going to take us to that place where he wants us to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I was talking with someone recently, and actually, I was talking with Daniel recently. I'll just call him out. We were talking about... this is a good thing. This is a good thing. We were talking about, you know, a lot of times when you pray for growth in a particular kind of thing, God doesn't just like zap you with growth. Often he puts opportunities in front of you to have to like flex those muscles. And so I think that's a great observation. And I think that's exactly the kind of thing I want to not struggle with anger. I want to not struggle with lust. I want to not struggle with jealousy. Whatever it is, you pray for the Lord to help you. Often it's, here's some particular situations where you need to flex that muscle. It really is kind of similar to like lifting weights. You gotta flex that muscle if you want to grow, and if you want to, you gotta power through some difficult circumstances if you want to progress. So, what's interesting about that is we want the outcome, but we don't want the means to get there. That's the thing. And that's what we see in Jesus' road to the cross, is Jesus is after the glory, but it's glory through the cross, not around the cross. And that's why he rebukes Peter so strongly. Peter basically says, over my dead body are you going to be crucified? And he says, get behind me, Satan. Because Jesus knows the glory comes and the salvation comes through judgment, not around judgment. And Jesus endured that judgment, but we still have the growing pains of it. Any other thoughts or questions about the sermon? Well, we can spend some time praying together. I'm happy to stick around if you want to ask me any questions afterward.
Thank you for listening. Grace Heritage Church meets in Auburn, Alabama. Visit us online at graceheritage.org for service times and other information.